Okay, Amy, so what has been the biggest change in your family during this year, this decade, this millennium known as 2020?
Well, before I talk about the actual biggest change, I have to talk about just the change in dynamic in our family because Barry and I had been empty nesters, like truly empty nesters, for about a year. And then COVID hit. And our oldest son, Anson, had been on a national Broadway tour. And so that all, of course, came to a screeching halt. And so he has been home. So we went from empty nesters to having an adult son living. It's hard not to say boy or child,
I
isn't
know.
it?
I know.
Adult son living in the house with us, which has been bonus time with him, even though it's a very hard time for him. So all of that to say that now I'm in the house with two of my favorite people. Man, if we could rope the newlyweds in, you know, it would just kind of be perfect. We'd have our own little compound going here. But anyway, but they're kind of happy just living on their own. COVID has suited newlyweds very well, hasn't it?
Leave and cleave is the only
exactly.
option.
But what it has meant is the big change for us is lots of time for in-depth conversations. You know, before Barry was traveling about half the time. He calculated how many nights away he had spent in the year before, and it was almost half the nights away. I know. Well, and so big change for me is I no longer have any time alone, but that's an aside. And so suddenly he is here, Anson is here, I am here. We are all here. Can everybody say amen? But we have these very long, in-depth conversations, and it's been really rich. And so much of it has been around the things that everybody's talking about, politics and the politics of COVID. Yikes. And primarily a lot of talk about race. And it's been good. And it's been super challenging to have 20 something in my house talking about race. So how about you? What are some of the big changes?
You know, we're in a similar situation. Anne Marie had come home before COVID. She graduated with her master's degree, Southern California. Some plans fell through. So she had already been here, for which we are. And again, that was very angsty for her, but it ended up when the shutdown started, and she's now regularly says how glad she is she didn't have to leave a situation, move out of an apartment, quit a job, or anything like that, or lose a job. And so, yeah, we've been processing so much of this year together in real time in ways that I don't even think we did when they were younger. And it's almost felt like a bit of a do-over opportunity, not an intentional one, but an opportunity to go, wait, I'm going to slow down and listen more. I'm going to engage in that conversation. Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations, certainly around the topics you mentioned, but especially around the topic of race. Anne Marie and I have purchased a big stack of books that we're working our way through, and come to find out, Jonathan had been doing a lot of reading on his own that I didn't know about. And so we've had some really, really rich conversations. And, you know, one of the things that's so interesting is as a parent, I thought that I would always be the one leading the way. You know, like you learn to drive, you drive your kids around, and then at some point they get their permit, but you still have to be in the car with them. And then they take the test and then they can drive on their own. Like that feels like the natural order of things, the way things should be. But when it comes to the whole conversation about race and racism and becoming anti-racist, it's been reversed.
Absolutely.
It's like my kids knew how to drive. And I didn't know how to crawl. And so I've been really grateful for the education that I've received from a variety of sources this year.
Well, I think that's what we all have in common, the two of us and our listeners, that we are all learning new things. In fact, my husband says that the buzzword at work, which he is actually coming to hate, but is pivot. And yeah. we have all had to pivot, whether it's in your business, in your work life, lots of moms staying at home and being homeschoolers when they never imagined doing so. In all of these things, we've had to pivot.
It's so true. And honestly, some days I feel dizzy because I have pivoted so much. Like I've spun in a circle like a top. I'm like, could we just make the world stop spinning quite so fast? And so I am incredibly grateful for the gracious teachers that have risen up. I know that there are many ways we can learn things, and sometimes I need people to get in my face and tell me I am just plain wrong, but that's really rare that that works. And so having you to talk with and bounce things off of, and having people who are who create a safe space for learning has been just incredibly valuable.
Oh, educators are invaluable during this time.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you are listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Dr. Lucretia Berry, author of What Lies Between Us, Fostering First Steps Towards Racial Healing. Lucretia is the creator of Brownicity.com, a contributor for Encourage.me, and a TED and Q Ideas speaker. As a wife, mom of three, and former college professor, her calling to active anti-racism led her to write What Lies Between Us.
What Lies Between Us is a journal and guide for those who are feeling stirred toward racial healing, but don't know where to begin.
Historically, the race topic and conversation are treacherous waters to navigate, and the colorblind approach has robbed us of the framework, language, and power to effectively address and dismantle it.
Most of us think and talk about race or racism, but few of us really understand how it works. When we don't understand how race and racism actually work, we are ineffective in our resolution. We have the right heart, but we lack the right tools.
Dr. Berry assembled this journal and guide to help begin the process of equipping you with the right tools. This journal and guide are your companion as you take your first steps towards analyzing race and racism and its personal and social effects.
Suited for personal or group studies, the journal component helps you self-evaluate your beliefs, identity, and behavior, which is valuable when learning new concepts or beginning to grapple with complex issues that go beyond right and wrong answers.
We're so excited to talk to Dr. Berry today, but we want to remind you to go back and listen to her episodes from 2 years ago, episodes number 113 and number 114, Finding Grace Solutions to the Problems of Race, Part 1 and Part 2. The links will be in the show notes. Lucretia, I cannot believe it, but it has been 2 years since we had you on the show last. Thank you for coming back.
Well, first of all, you're welcome. Thank you for having me back. And I would not have, if you didn't say it was 2 years ago, I would have thought, oh, it was just maybe last year.
I know. And it's been a crazy 2 years. So tell us, fill us in, catch us up. What has happened with you and Brownicity in the last 2 years?
I don't think I can remember 2 years back, but I will say in the fall, we actually launched our membership site, and I wanted to create like a space, like my classroom, right? I'm a part-time teacher and I have a classroom, and I wanted to create a space like that for people who want to come learn. So I call it a psychologically safe space to bravely learn. And because I am an educator, I think by design and profession, the learning environment matters. And so I wanted to create something that is curated as if, you know, you're sitting maybe at my table and having a conversation, because so much of my work has come from that. Like, people were motivated by kind of one-on-one conversations they were having with me, and they said, okay, you should do something with this more publicly, like please create something and teach us. And so, as you know, I've been teaching, I had already been teaching, you know, face-to-face, like in a classroom in a school, but also in churches. And then last year, just felt the need to be accessible to people beyond me geographically. And so created this membership site so that also it's attracting people who really want to learn, not just like the social media looky-loos or check in, check out, or let me troll you because I don't have enough education to understand what you're actually talking about. And actually, after having kind of getting beat up by a few trolls, I'm like, yeah, because the trolls don't just affect me. Like, I know why they are misunderstanding and bullying. Like, I know what that's about. But for people who are watching, you know, publicly watching me or watching Brownness City be trolled, it creates fear mm-hmm. in those people. So then they don't want to maybe fully step into a learning journey. So I created the membership site, and I'm so glad I did. We kind of had initially a slow trickle, but then with COVID and you can't meet in person publicly, then we already had this in place. And then with the emphasis on racial justice that has occurred, unfortunately, due to the death of George Floyd, then we already had this cultivated space that people came running to. So now we have a large membership and a lot of people taking courses, and we offer foundational courses. And then we continue to, like, if I can come up for air, like, I have a whole list of other courses to record and get in there to help continue to build people's capacity to be a part of the transformation that they know is possible.
Well, it's just been such a pleasure for me to watch the growth of Brownness City, to see God's hand and how he prepared you for this digital time, and then to watch it explode, because I know I've benefited so much from your ministry, and I'm just so excited to see others. And I totally agree with you that it was such a great move to, you know, have people make an investment in it, because we really, when we have to make a little bit of a financial investment, then we're really personally and psychologically invested too. Right. So well done. So excited to see all
Thank
of that.
You.
And what's the name of your membership site?
Yeah, it's just Brownicity. So if you go to brownicity.com,
okay,
there's a link that says sign in, or you can go to learn. That's one of the ways to access the membership site. So just go to brownicity.com.
Great. We'll be sure to put the link in the show notes for all of our listeners. And I'll just throw in my agreement. There is nothing like a membership site to make sure that, I mean, that whole idea of having a safe, psychologically safe space. And then those who are in together have a common goal. Tend to get a lot of people that have a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to feel safe. And yes. feel like you're with peers who are at least somewhat like-minded, even though, like me, you know, I'm thinking back, I like you, I can't remember what 2 years ago was like, but I do know that for me, you were the first person to introduce me to so many concepts that I'm now embarrassed. I'm like, how did I make it to just over 50 not knowing so many of these things? And you so generously said that some of us are kind of like in kindergarten and some are more like in elementary and high school and some are more in college when it comes to this conversation. What I realized was, like, I was barely born, you know, 2 years ago. Like, I was so in diapers when we first talked, and I'm not sure I've made a whole lot of progress, but I'm so grateful that you gave me the introduction you did. And I feel like I have a working vocabulary that I didn't have before, and I feel like I do less harm. Like, that's a big right. place. Like, I can think to myself, oh, I want to put this on Facebook. No, that would be performative. And I understand what that means. And why I need to pray it through and check something through Amy, for example. So that's been, I feel like I've made progress. I am increasingly aware of how much more progress I have to make. So how would you describe what's the same from, I won't say 2 years ago, I'll just say what you feel is the same as far as the last time we talked, and then what would you say has changed?
Well, I would say that the type of kind of basic understanding, foundational understanding, and an educational approach is still needed. I mean, I had a person say to me, well, because of course this person would be in graduate school, you know, on the spectrum, who said, I don't think we're at that point where we need that anymore. And I know that that's not the case. Like, we still do. And, you know, what is evident in that is, you know, when we offered our first virtual What Lies Between Us, over 2,300 households enrolled, like, within 2 weeks. And a household was just, you know, multiple people watching at the same time. So we still have a large population that needs the introductory class and are happy to be serving there. Although I am not in kindergarten, I do have a heart for the beginner. And so I think that is still the same. I looked through the study guide and to see, okay, are there ideas, approaches, concepts, language that I need to update? Nope. I sadly, you know, I wrote the original version in 2016 and still the same, this thing is still needed. But what is maybe change is, of course, the amount of people who now are leaning in, who actually are open to inquiry, asking a question, or looking at things through a different lens. Now that, for me, in my lifetime, that's unprecedented. I've never seen anything like this, where even around the world, because see, through this membership site, we have students in other countries and on other continents, which is, you know, I'm like in awe, wow. But I've just never seen a response that way, or so many people moving forward or attempting to move forward all at once.
Well, that really brings us well to the next question, because there feels like a shift. And I've been asking some of my friends, Kieran McMeary, our mutual friend, you know, that are in this with me, that have been helping me, like, do you think this is different? And do you think this is different? I mean, some people are talking about the events kind of post Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd as a tipping point. Do you see it that way? How would you describe
it? What it feels like to me is, we definitely are moving forward in this love and justice, but it's the beginning. And so I don't want people to think like, okay, we did this thing. Okay, I'm done. Or we did this thing. Okay, we completed a step. Yes, we have this momentum, but it is just it's the beginning. And so even the work before this was primer. Like if you have to use a gardening analogy, so we have the seed and there's all this work that the soil does to the seed while the seed is still underground, you know, so then the seed is in prepared to kind of peek up, you know, above the soil level or the ground so that it can get ready to expand into a full plant, tree, or whatever. But we're just, I feel like, at the beginning of peeking up through the soil. So
it's a great picture.
That's
helpful.
My picture.
So how have the events following the deaths of Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and others, how have they impacted how you are communicating with your family, with your friends, and with the people that you lead?
With our family, with our children specifically, I mean, it's just a part of the normal dialogue that we've already been having in our home. Now, of course, with, you know, the incidents being highlighted all together, kind of more intensely, we are together as a family. We talk that through. We talk about the time we're in history. Like, we try to contextualize ourselves. Like, where are we and what does this mean? And we have those conversations. I know that as a mom, I'm right now in this time, and, you know, we've always been intentional, my husband and I, with these conversations, but we've even leveled that up. Like, see the pattern of how fear is often used to keep people docile or in status quo or from moving forward. So again, just very intentional and explicit. Sometimes, you know, on days that I'm tired, but I'm like, but I'm alive and their deaths, you know, will not be in vain. So continuing to, I don't know, build on what has been laid before us because of these deaths that keep happening.
You know, at 50, I'm becoming aware of things that I should have been aware of at a very, very young age. And so unless people like me start having these conversations with their kids at a much younger age, it seems to me that persons of color are constantly having to re-educate a whole new crop of white people.
Yeah, or people in general. Yeah.
How do you do that without feeling completely discouraged? Like, you know, you're talking about having these conversations with your children from a very young age. My kids are the ones who are educating me. They're 27 and 29. And so I just feel like, you know, so you have all of these people who are getting their PhD to the PhD level, and you have all of these new crops of kindergartners over and over and over again. I mean, how do you keep coming back into this conversation feeling like you have to start over from scratch with so many of us?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. But I think it's because like, okay, I am a teacher. So it'd be different if, you know, like if I were, I don't know, a tech engineer and a predominantly working in a predominantly white space. And then my colleagues kept asking me questions, and expecting me to, you know, be the, be their muscle, be their teacher, or be their, you know, shield. That would be, traumatizing and exhausting. But for me specifically, I think because I am a teacher who happens to be educating on this topic, I sincerely, purely look at it as like, okay, this is what I'm doing. So even if I weren't Black, like I'd probably be doing this thing. And because I am like educating, like that's the lane I stay in, I do get to see students or learners grow and blossom and bloom. So, you know, look at you, Sherry, look at you, Amy, you know, I get to see that. I get to see high school students, like, you know, my high school students, 9th through 12th grade. And I will say, you know, when they start to learn history and they get a framework and they have some context, they express the same thing, like, which is kind of funny to me because they say, I'm in the 9th grade. How come I don't know all of this stuff right now? I feel betrayed. Why didn't they teach us this in elementary school? Which, yes. And so, you know, let's work so that our curriculum is a reflection of the truth. That's what I am committed to because I love helping people connect the dots. And I love creating learning spaces and curriculum where I watch people grow. You know, the Latin word for educate means to draw out, right? So you already have it in you. Learners already have it in them. And so it's up to the educator to help draw it out. That right there gives me life. I had planned to work with some students over the summer to keep working on some things. Well, because Brownicity exploded, so to speak, I really haven't been able to do that. But they have been doing it on their own. I read the emails and I'm watching these and I'm sad because they can't participate, but they have been holding, I want to say either weekly or bi-weekly Zoom groups where they are educating their peers. I had one student write students writing letters to the administrators asking for more, you know. And so again, that is life-giving. And so that's how I keep, see, Amy's waving because so she won't cry.
Well, right. Well, Sherry and I are both teachers too. See? So we totally get it. Right, that is making me cry because that is the desire of every teacher's heart.
Right.
So that's awesome.
So that's how I'm fueled is I see people and I've seen all ages. One of my favorite students was an 80-something-year-old who said she knew she needed healing when one of her white granddaughters told her she was dating, maybe potentially marrying an African-American man. And she said, Lucretia, in my heart, I felt, you know, a stab. And she said, uh-oh, I have some stuff, some issues in there. And so she came to class and grew significantly. And then, you know, she's like, can you come to my assisted living development, you know, and come here. So just the fact that, yeah, people of all ages have this capacity to get this and they want to. I mean, I know not everybody does, but for those who do, it's amazing.
That's so hope-filled.
Right.
That's exactly. So hope-filled. Oh, I love that. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I hope our listeners all feel, I have this like huge sense of hope in hearing you say that.
Well, let's get really practical here. So many people feel helpless, but want to do something. So what is your best advice for persons of color and for white people?
I mean, I'm always going to lead with education. So if you can get educated, currently I feel like it's a lot easier. Every time I look up, there's a new, like a 21-day anti-racism this or a course or a series. When you have this kind of fundamental understanding of how things work, then you can ask the right questions that then lead to what you can do specifically. So for example, I'm going to do my to-do or my next steps, and my to-do is going to look different because I'm a teacher, I'm a mom, you know, I'm an African-American woman, you know, my husband is white, we're in a multi-ethnic family. So mine may look different, but what everyone needs to be doing is being intentional because we have been given this myth that race and racism has been de facto, like, oh, it just happened. The one that I oh, I push back against the most is like people think like, well, it was even in the Bible. Okay, so yes, ethnic, tribal, you know, preference and discrimination is a little bit different, a lot different than people writing policies and putting policies in place and practices in place and just creating a whole another narrative. Like, we're just going to create a whole other story about humans is exactly what has happened. We have to be intentional about learning and then moving to deconstruct the beliefs and the practices and policies that have been put in place. So my husband, who works at a corporation, I think they have recently created a whole team to focus on their metrics, to examine how they have existed in a system and then how they are not intentionally, but how they are perpetuating the racist status quo. So amazing. When you understand how it has worked and then you ask the right questions, then you get to answers about what you can do specifically in your sphere of influence. And so currently right now, my children's school, they're doing an all out remapping of the curriculum. That's necessary. We have to intentionally begin to decolonize and rearrange how we have sustained this hierarchy that is harmful to all of us, wherever you are on the hierarchy.
That's so good, because it is work and it does require intention. It is not just going to happen. So that great advice. So Lucretia, this has all been so amazing, but what closing words do you have to motivate our listeners who want to be part of the solution in the problems of race in our country?
Well, I would like for your listeners to understand the power that we have as individuals, but also as a collective society and a collective world. What may be a problematic about kind of our notion of American individualism is that we think that, well, I am only in charge of myself, or I can only do something that affects me. But no, as we are a society and a community and a family of people, and we need to give ourselves, like, don't wait on whatever leader, like, whatever, it's your pastor or your teacher or your parent or your president, you know, don't wait on this permission to fully be active, you know, to fully activate our potential to create the world that we know is possible. I think when you have this lens of, oh, well, I'm just an individual, you feel too small, right? I know I did. I felt too small when, you know, Spirit was like, okay, I need you to do this out loud. And I'm like, no way. But then, you know, Spirit showed me a vision of a ripple effect. So if I just do my one thing and do it well, you know, do it with intention, then yes, there will be, you know, a ripple effect. And so let's be this stream, you know, or let's be this ocean that overtakes and overwhelms. And we can do it. You have to be hope-filled. You have to be inspired by love.
We hope you've enjoyed episode 201 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Listeners, we are so grateful for you and that you're with us every single week.
And we're so grateful to the Grit and Grace Patreon support team for making this week's podcast possible.
Patreon supporters, we just love you so much, and you make so many wonderful things possible for Grit and Grace.
If you'd like to make a one-time donation or become a monthly supporter, head to gritandgracethepodcast.com/support, and you'll find the details there.
Check out our webpage at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode201. There you'll find this week's transcript, a link to order What Lies Between Us, and a link to join Brownicity's educational membership site.
Join us next week when we'll be processing what we've learned from our conversation with Dr. Lucretia Berry.
For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So take it.